And go.
I'm very pleased to welcome back to Fremantle Shipping News, Professor Martin Drum. We are presenting, Martin, what has been many views from the Roundhouse. And this week there's a lot to talk about. Where are you this week? Are you in Paris or Lyon or Broome?
I'm in the heart of Fremantle's West End, one of the best places in the world to be. Michael, looking out at the roundhouse.
Well, Martin, I've sort of turned the tables or done what you usually do. I'm in Sydney. I've been having breakfast, looking at the cruise ships at Circular Quay, and thinking about our nation's origins as a modern, largely European nation, but with real indigenous roots. And it's fascinating being in Sydney. But there's lots of politics going on Martin. The Prime Minister, who usually gets bagged heavily because he hasn't been off paying visits to President Trump, or that President Trump doesn't like him, or that they don't have very good diplomatic relations, or Kevin Rudd, the ambassador, isn't doing his job properly, all seem to have been turned around. We've got a critical minerals agreement signed between Australia and the US. The PM was off in Washington, D.C. Trumpy was shaking his hand, and even Kevin Rudd was getting some sort of satirical or some sort of nod from the president. But can you tell our listeners what the critical minerals agreement is all about?
Very good starting point. The Critical Minerals Agreement is basically a joint Australian and US investment into a range of projects, and it's a really broad term that will enable us to not only get the mines going, make them financial, but also, more importantly, the processing. The processing of these critical minerals, we're told, is totally dominated by China, who put whatever price on it they like, and of course, they control supply. And they go into everything. There's some military applications and security applications, but there's a lot of day-to-day applications like phones, etc., that rely on this. So there is actually, I think, some security and strategic reasons for Australia and the US ganging up on this. And I think it was a great little piece for Albanese to put on the table. That sounds good. It's not a very big investment by US standards. It's a few billion here and there. What's that? That's chicken feed, Michael, in the US. But it's a way to engage Trump, and of course, Trump loves a deal. So this was good to put this new deal on the table.
While I was having my latte and granola at Circular Quay, looking across the water to the Crown Princess cruise ship, which just left Fremantle recently and turned up here in Sydney, I saw the newspaper headline which said, "Not a boom, maybe a trickle," suggesting just what the financial advantages are out of this deal. Does that sort of sound right to you?
There have been a range of concerns about it from that perspective. It's all very well to go and sign a fancy looking deal and it looks good and you're holding up the agreement, Trump and Albanese, etc. But there's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet. There's all the mining approvals, which all have to meet environmental standards and they've got to go through state and federal government processes. There's still arguments that have to be mounted about making those vi mines sustainable and viable over the short, medium, and long term. And then, there's a whole range of questions about processing facilities which haven't been set up yet. So there's a lot of things that need to go right to make it work.
I referred at the outset to where I am in Sydney and the Indigenous history of Australia. There might be some good things that come through for the paying the rent when it comes to native title holders in the country, Martin.
Yeah, well, you'd certainly expect that. You certainly expect that there's a major component of consultation, discussion, negotiation with traditional owners on several of these key sites. I think I saw one up in Arafura in Northern Territory, which would certainly be the case.
Australia is always lamenting the fact that it doesn't have any industry anymore, doesn't it exports its minerals, they go somewhere else where they turn them into to things. It's always been an issue, as long as I can remember. Are we likely to get some sort of refining industries out of this, Martin?
I think it's a good question. I think that sounds like a lot of potential. A lot of people who criticize Australia, they'll say, look, We dig up and ship out all of these key precious minerals, etc., and other people make a lot of money out of them. So for that group, I think that they'd find this appealing as well. And the whole idea of the subsidy is normally it's very difficult to compete directly with China on price and the like. But if you're tipping in a lot of government money because it's so key strategically and militarily, etc., then you can make that work.
I have to say, Martin, I'm an unabashed lover of widgets. If you can create a widget and put it in a box, a container, and send it to somebody somewhere else over the world, and they pay for it, I think it's a great idea. We'll see what happens. But there's no doubt the PM's got what you'd say is a big smile on his face. Is it going to stay there?
It's hard not to see why. I mean, if you think about it, firstly, he's just won a whopping election win with 94 seats. The opposition, it's still fighting amongst itself at the moment. And sooner or later, I think they'll get out of that and they'll move into policy and other modes. But that's where they're at the moment. He's one of his biggest critique of him in international affairs is he didn't get this meeting with Trump, and there was a the criticism was you're not on the same page as him. I always found that to be a, over-egging that situation. And indeed, he's silenced those critics as well. The PM was, the president was effusive in his praise of Albanese. Oh, you're really popular, you're doing a wonderful job and all of these sorts of things. Now, that's very Trump-like. That's what Trump does. He either gives you lavish praise or he absolutely gets stuck into you. There's not much in between. And I suppose we might talk about Kevin Rudd in that respect at some stage as well.
It seemed to me that President Trump's had so many dealings with the Chinese lately. He's using Chinese expressions now. I think he described our Prime Minister as great leader.
Yeah, I think that was it was kind of amusing. I always think that Trump likes people who are in command at home, doesn't he? And maybe there's a bit of that with Albanese. He's got the brief that says, this guy's pretty much Alan challenged at home. So you work with him. But I generally still hold the view as as well as that meeting went, we are low on the US's radar generally. That's why it took 9 months. To get a meeting with Trump. They like us, we get along well with them. But really, I think his mind, if you actually follow the US media, it switches back to Gaza, Ukraine, all these other things pretty quickly.
Martin, coming straight back to domestic politics here in Australia, something that could take the smile off the PM's dial is the idea that Murray Watt, the Minister for Environment in Canberra, might somehow or the other or not get through the Environmental Protection Act, much talked about. It looks like the Coalition don't like it because it's not pro-business, and the Greens don't like it because it's not pro-environment. Well, have you started to dip your fingers into all of this?
Oh, it's leading to all of those problems with nature positive laws and that we saw in the first term. It has all the makings of a stalemate here. The opposition do need a suitable issue to campaign on and differentiate themselves, and they'll be painting themselves as pro-business, pro-mining, and say that there's more green tape associated with this. For the Greens, they can knock it on the head altogether because it doesn't go far enough, or they can extract major changes in letting it pass. And they know Albanese would be desperate for a win. So I think there's some very difficult negotiating coming through for the government here, and this is not going to be resolved in a hurry.
Are you prepared to make a prediction? I'm sensing from what you've said, and certainly my view is that a Labor government, which tries to portray itself as progressive in most respects, with a whopping majority, which though still needs to get a deal with a crossbench in the Senate, would want to get something that looks green through the Parliament during this term.
It does need to demonstrate its credentials. It's on the progressive side of politics. This is pretty core business. The environment is quite important. It needs to land something, and it just sort of. I think they're still more likely probably to deal with the Greens because I do see this as as an issue for the coalition. They want to completely differentiate themselves. That's where I think they'll land. On the other hand, the Greens, they don't want to just, I think part of the critique of them was that they didn't do some common sense deals in the first term. Whether that's fair or not, that was part of the, with housing and a few other areas. So I think that they are likely to cut a deal, but I think they want some significant changes before they do it.
Let's go back to the Trump world, Martin. To take a quick appraisal, it sounds like everything is not so much on the tenterhooks in Gaza and Israel, but it's tentative. Things are moving forward. They're talking about the international force coming in to try and to start operating things. But the Ukrainian situation's the strange one. There was going to be this big meeting between Trumpy and Putin in Budapest, and before we knew it was off. Hadn't heard Trump sound so positive and excited in a long time. Well, for a couple of days anyway. So what's going on in both those places? Are they in any way connected?
There was an interesting question from a journo went at the Albanese Trump thing, and she said, if you're going so well, why is this so hard to fix and or something? And he said it's much more complex than it seems. It's directly about Ukraine, and I thought that was just kind of interesting. He also fired back at her and said, "Do you know what you're talking about, or something?" And apparently, she'd just been to Ukraine twice or something, Michael. But anyway, we're definitely come to a bit of a stalemate here, and there is. And he hasn't said it publicly, but you're onto something. He was going to have this meeting with Putin. It was looking positive, etc. And all of a sudden, the big change of tack. The meeting's abandoned, and he's slapping direct sanctions on Russian oil. So I thought that was a really interesting combination of two factors. Clearly, somewhere amongst that, he's lost heart, hope, etc., that Putin's coming back to the table anytime soon. So he's moved from carrot to stick very quickly here. And I think I'm right in saying this is the first new sanctions for a long time that he's actually slapped on Russia. So it does indicate a bit of it, not just a change of tone, but there's some actions backing that change up.
Martin, just before all of that happened, and it seemed to flow out of this suggestion, threat possibility, that the Tomahawks that can fly all the way into deep Russia from Ukraine were going to be supplied, or might possibly be supplied, to President Zelensky and his people. That looked like perhaps some sort of bargaining chip, but if things become sticky, can you see the arming up of Ukraine by the Americans in that way, or that just start World War III that no one wants?
Well, there's also a meeting recently between Zelensky and Trump where Zelensky came to the US trying to get the Tomahawk missiles, and he got a clear, we're told, because this wasn't reported, like this wasn't Trump coming out, but he got told that a frank no, a quick rebuttal, and it's not coming your way. And I think part of it was the US said, well, we need to operate those, and they don't really want to be operating missiles that are launching at Russia, not just yet anyway. That's also been, Zelensky's also got the rebuttal. So there's a bit of a sense here from Trump is that you guys aren't serious about peace for the moment. And so no to you, Zelensky, and a few more sanctions for you, Putin.
So do you think Putin still thinks that if he just holds in there, keeps pushing hard to Netanyahu, Israeli war cabinet approach, he can in a sense obliterate Ukraine and just walk in and take it over?
I definitely think Putin's game is the long game. Just keep on waiting out Trump. Will Trump lose momentum? Will he lose interest? He knows Trump doesn't want to be in a long war to keep on supplying Ukraine and all of those sorts of things. So he thinks he can wait out Trump. Then Trump's got this difficult decision whether he just, how long does he let that go on for? What actual steps is he prepared to take? He's got all sorts of leverage. It just depends on how much he wants to directly use. And the sanctions are an interesting development, I think, because we haven't seen that to now.
Martin, can we switch from everywhere else in the planet to Fremantle itself? We've just had elections in Fremantle, And they've been quite interesting. There's a new mayor, a couple of new councillors. If you see the photo that goes out with today's The Weekly Edition, you'll think to yourself, "Gosh, that looks like a completely different council." A new mayor in the middle, a couple of new councillors here and there. Some old hands have gone. But Martin, on election eve, the MUA, a well-known large union having its headquarters in North Fremantle, the Maritime Union of Australia, took the front page of the local print newspaper, Fremantle Herald, with a sort of a big black and yellow and a little bit of white advertisement: Hannah Fitzharding's broken promises, Notre Dame not paying rates, state government pay around house maintenance, retail shops closing down, Frio can't afford another 4 years of this, and authorised by Will Tracy, the Maritime Union of Australia. And there was a little insert there showing that along those lines, that's what Hannah Fitzharding was aiming to do 4 years ago. A lot of people were really taken aback that this advertisement was placed. In fact, I think some people thought when they first saw it on the front page of the Herald that it was a Herald opinion piece or editorial. Did you see it, and what did you make of it all?
I did see it. Look, full disclosure, my employer Notre Dame was mentioned, and as you said, in all of that. But it was it as a full wraparound, it did look like an actual Herald story. And of course, if you look at more closely, it's got the endorsement, political endorsement, etc., of the MUA. For me, it's not just about what you say; it's also about how you say it. And I've never been a big fan of negative campaigning like this. And the unfortunate nature about negative campaigning at the local level is it tends to be extra personal. And I thought there was a nasty element to it that didn't sit comfortable with me. The other thing about the timing of it was so late on the morning, coming out as it did on election eve, with postal voting, it influenced almost no voters. Pretty much everyone's mailed off their postal vote. There were a few people handed in the day, but at local government level, most of that's come in. So it's not actually influencing vote. It's just having a go, I think. And I wasn't really comfortable with that style of campaigning. I think that actually ends up creating more division in the community, which I think is unfortunate. I know that Ben Lawver, who our incoming mayor, and congratulations to Ben, or we haven't said that. Congratulations to Ben on his election. Distanced himself very quickly from that, and we'll certainly take him at his word that he had nothing to do with it himself. So he saw that as not appropriate, and everything else. And I think most people I've talked to have said that it's not a style that they're comfortable with either.
I'm not familiar, but then again, my memory might be slipping, and it mightn't go back far enough. In any event, of unions in and around Fremantle, a very unionised place over the years, coming in like this on a municipal election, are you familiar with it?
I've seen plenty of negative campaigning in my time. I don't recall sort of a full page advertisement from a union at local government level like that. No, I don't. I can't think of a precedent of that particular type of thing.
I got a lot of feedback as editor of the Fremantle Shipping News about it. People, as I say, were quite taken back, and so I got in touch with the mayor-elect, and he agreed to engage in a digital interview with me where I set a number of questions for him. And you've alluded to the answer that he gave to this one. I said, "Ben, we have to ask. Many are wondering how it was that the MUA paid for a front page advert in the Herald on election eve, pretty much bagging the performance of the former Mayor Hannah Fitzharding for not keeping previous campaign pledges. Did you know it was about to be published?" And his answer was no. "And upon being made aware of its existence, I stopped what I was doing, immediately wrote a statement calling it out, and then actually drove to the union office to ask them in person to withdraw it." And of course, there was some earlier disclosure there that at one point, not for more than a couple of years, Ben Lawver worked as a researcher in the MUA. He was not a union official or anything like that. But it certainly made a lot of people feel uncomfortable. Will we see just what sort of money that the MUA had to spend on the advertisement? Does that come out in the course of political disclosures?
So all campaign expenditure at local government level has to be declared. And I think you and I have talked about political donation and expenditure laws in the past. And thankfully, they have been reformed, and we'll know how much was spent by the MUA on the campaign. That's a good thing. Of course, we don't find out these things sometimes till after the election, which is still unfortunate, especially with something coming through that late. But we will know.
Well, Martin, it's been an eventful time. A smiling Prime Minister, lots of local government political activity in Fremantle and the rest of the world trying to do the best to make we humans doubt the continued existence of us on the in the planet. But I guess we remain optimistic, keep our feet on the ground, and we'll do another edition of View from the Roundhouse next Friday, Martin, wherever you'll be, wherever I'll be.
Well, look forward to it as always.
Well, see you then, Martin.